If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe at lifebetweenthevines.com.
I have never produced a vintage that I think is bad wine. They're just different.
We are farmers, and in order for us to make it, we have to be able to sell the products that we produce.
For better or for worse, I've learned by usually making mistakes and then just trying not to make them a second time.
So for us, you know, the central thing is the fruit, and it's what's given by the vineyard.
It all starts in the vineyard, as we've all heard that, right?
So drink a lot and drink well. That would be my advice.
We say, so drink the wine. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 418. This week we feature Dave Bryant, general manager of 4.0 Cellars, soon to be known as Texas Wine Collective, Fredericksburg, Texas. Well, it's taken some time, but our podcast has finally found its way to the great state of Texas. Dave Bryant is the general manager at 4.0 Cellars in Fredericksburg, which is soon to be known as the Texas Wine Collective. As a Napa Valley native, Dave knows his way around wine, and his home is now in Texas wine country. We spoke with Dave during the final week of 2020 to learn a bit about Texas wine and discover exactly what the state of Texas has to offer the wine world. You can listen to Dave on our Vino Lingo segment defining the term Texas wine. It's taken a little bit of time, but we finally have gotten to the state of Texas, which I am totally, totally thrilled to be able to talk to somebody from there. And on the phone, we have Dave Bryant, general manager of 4.0 Cellars in Texas. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm great, Ray. How are you?
Very good. So to set the record straight, you mentioned to me there was going to be a rebranding on 4.0. So tell me about that, if you would.
That's right. We are exciting times out here. We are rebranding 4.0 to the Texas Wine Collective. Kind of how our business is set up is there's three different wineries that all kind of sell their wine here at Texas Wine Collective, and we've kind of got this cool family of wineries that we get to represent and have a lot of fun with.
Great. That sounds really interesting. Now, you first, where are you in Texas?
So we are just outside of Fredericksburg, Texas. So it's about an hour and 15 minutes west of Austin, about an hour and a half northwest of San Antonio. We're in what's called the Hill Country. So it's kind of a portion of Texas. The landscape changes a lot, and kind of where we're at, it basically looks like a big Coombsville, if you're familiar with Napa.
Oh, yes. Very well. Been there once or twice. Interesting. We're gonna come back to talking about the geography and all that in a couple of minutes. But let's talk about Texas wine. If I know anything from all my trips out west, Texans love Cabernet. Is that a fair thing to say?
It is absolutely true.
I've been amazed by that and how very popular California wine is in Texas. So now it's to the point of, hey, we can do this here, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's, I don't know if we're in Cabernet country. I know it's one of the most widely planted grapes in Texas right now. But I think as we educate people and consumers get to know Texas wine a little bit, I think they're going to see more Rhone varietals that are kind of pushing towards that world-class quality.
Interesting. Well, let's go back to the beginning again, because I do that, and talk about these wineries you're representing. What are the names of the specific wineries?
So there's three wineries. Brennan Vineyards, they are located up in Comanche, Texas, which is about 2.5 hours north of Fredericksburg. Lost Oak Winery, which is in Burleson, which is just outside of Fort Worth, and McPherson Cellars, which is in Lubbock.
So what you're doing is, are you the crush pad there as well, or is it strictly a tasting point? How is that working?
It's a little bit of both. So we're building an on-site winery over the next probably 18 months or so, and we've got some barrels that we're going to be storing here for experiences. But really, we're kind of the central hub for each of those three wineries. We work together on winemaking. Blending especially is going to be a big focus for this next year, as well as sales and marketing.
And I'm assuming that these are three different winemakers as well, correct?
They are.
Interesting. It's a great idea to do something like that, but there's a definitely some acreage property between here and there. Does that create any kind of a difficulty for them getting to you, that sort of thing? Logistical issues, I should say.
There's always logistical issues, but I think it's one of those things that, you know, me being kind of new to Texas, people out here don't mind driving. You know, driving 2, 3, 4, 5 hours at a time isn't really an issue.
Yeah, you don't have much of a choice, do you?
Yeah, right. The state's so big, it's kind of, you're forced to do it.
Mm.
But it's kind of neat in that most of the vineyards are actually grown up in the High Plains area, so it's north of Lubbock. So a lot of the wineries that are physically located are actually down in the hill country close to Fredericksburg. But a lot of the vineyard source is actually 4.5-5 hours away.
Texas is in the top 10, if not the top 5, in terms of wine producers as well as grape growers these days. Is that a fair thing to say?
Absolutely.
Where did that come from? I mean, we know California, we know Oregon and Texas. That seems for a lot of people that's coming out of left field.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun. And I think one of the unique things about us is our kind of, you know, ownership and partnership with McPherson Cellars. So Kim McPherson's dad, everybody refers to him as Doc McPherson, was kind of almost the Robert Mondavi of Texas. He started planting grapes in the 60s and really was the, you know, first one to go out on a limb and do something a little bit crazy. And it's kind of grown from there. I think one of our big advantages is right, we've got Dallas, Austin, San Antonio all within kind of driving distance. So we have Texans that have grown up usually drinking California wine that are now very proud of where they're from, obviously, and want to enjoy something that was crafted in the state that they are from.
It's very interesting. And you said you're not from there. Where are you from?
I am born and raised in the Napa Valley.
Well, that's a bit ironic, isn't it?
It is. And that's really the opportunity out here is what brought me out. And people that I had talked to before we made the move referred to it kind of as Napa in the 60s. And I think it's kind of progressing quickly through the 60s, 70s, and probably into 80s. But it's really neat to see this kind of new wine region that has all the visitation it could kind of handle. And really what we're catching up on is, I think, winemaking process, grape growing process, and really pushing for quality wine.
That's great. When I was talking about proximity before, Napa, you pretty much can't drive too far without hitting a winery. Is there a closer proximity to the wineries there, or is there, obviously, because Texas is a very large place, are they spread out far? How does that work?
They're way more spread out. We've got kind of Texas's version of Highway 29, and Napa is Highway 290, and we've got a lot of wineries kind of on that general road, highway that ranges about goes from Austin straight into Fredericksburg. So that's kind of the main thoroughfare. But, you know, for kind of, you know, Napa's got the Napa Valley AVA is 43,000 acres. The Texas Hill Country AVA that Fredericksburg sits within is 8 million acres.
That's a little different.
It's a huge amount of space. So we've got wineries that are, you know, a couple hours away. They're still in the same AVA.
Wow, that's really interesting. I should say this, a big thank you to my friend Jean Hofegler, who connected us, which is, Jean's been a friend for a long time, and he's a great guy. Is he consulting for one of the wineries down there, or how is that working?
We're talking about it. So he's working on a custom label project for us right now, my goal is to work with Jean in any way, shape, or form I can. We worked together when we were both at Alpha Omega. And I'm a huge fan of his, not just from a winemaking side, but business mind and a person in general.
And when were you at AO?
I was there, 2016, 2017, a little bit of 2018.
Okay. Well, Alpha Omega is a wonderful winery, and Jean certainly put the wheels on it as well as to go off and do all these other projects. I hope it works out. Once again, I'm going to go back to this idea of people looking at Texas. When it comes to selling wine, it's anywhere other than, of course, Oregon, Washington, the very typical, and of course, Napa, Sonoma, typical places can be a little bit more of a challenging sell. How does that work for you?
Yeah, for us right now, I mean, probably 95% of our sales are to customers that live in Texas. So we don't see a lot of distribution for a lot of Texas wines yet. There's some out there, definitely, some of the larger brands, but it's not widely known outside of Texas that Texas has this amazing little wine region. I think one of the great things is we're the second most visited region behind Napa Valley.
Mm.
So we see a lot of people and we have an opportunity to really educate visitors about what we do and how we do it.
Often I've talked with winemakers about the idea of getting shelf space. And because 50 states are now doing that, it makes it that much more of a challenge for you guys on top of everything else.
Yeah, and you still go into the average restaurant here, even locally, and 80% of the wine list is California. So it's definitely something we're going to have to fight for, but I think it's a worthwhile fight because it pushes, I think, the winemaking side of the business to really focus on quality and try and put out a product that not only is as good of what these restaurants are putting on lists in California-wise and Washington and Oregon as well, but really push to find what we're great at out here, like other major wine regions have kind of found their niche.
Interesting. So obviously then distribution down the road, that's kind of what you're hoping for. But at this point, what is the output of 4.0 in terms of cases?
So we in total sell, we're right around 25,000-30,000 cases annually. Each of the wineries kind of produces a different amount to themselves. McPherson is the biggest by far, but Lost Oak and Brennan are a little bit smaller. They only do about 10,000 to 15,000 cases a year.
Coming from Napa, which I think is really unique, bringing a taste of Napa to Texas, climate-wise, and you mentioned these wineries aren't obviously in each other's back pocket, but is there a huge variance in climate, and what is the climate for growing wines like where you're at?
So most of the grapes are still grown up in kind of one area, one AVA. It's the Texas High Plains. And it's up north of Lubbock. It's kind of up into the Texas Panhandle. And up there, you're getting about 3,500 feet in elevation. It's mostly planted, you know, most of it up there from what you see is big agriculture. You're seeing people growing cotton, wheat, peanuts. So grapes is kind of a new way of using your land up there. And for people that have never grown grapes, they are quickly finding out it's a very challenging way to make a living. But up there in the High Plains, you've got really well-draining soil, warm days, cool nights, and we have kind of some extra things thrown in there, like, you know, the possibility of tornado and giant hail and straight-line winds that make it kind of growing grapes a little bit interesting each year. But the great thing with Texas, right, we've got this big state, so we've got grapes grown. There's 8 different AVAs throughout the state. So you can go into East Texas where you have to deal with humidity and some other kind of fun things, and back into West Texas where, again, you're at a little bit higher elevation and you're getting, you know, next to no rain. So it's kind of fun that you can get all these different styles of wine that come from these different vineyards throughout the state.
So with you being from Napa, have you seen many other transplants as well as winemakers, vineyard workers, that kind of thing coming from Napa to Texas?
There's been a few, but not widespread yet. I think the secret's going to get out, and you know, I'm happy to be one of the ones that helps spread the word, because I think there's so much opportunity out here, and I think especially from the business side of things, the business climate is, I think, much more friendly in Texas, especially for wineries. Nobody's regulating how many people can come in and taste wine on a daily basis, and that's really nice. But I think there's so much opportunity, and there's no rules. You're not grandfathered into some specific way of doing things. You can kind of reinvent yourself and, you know, strive to make the best wine you possibly can.
How long have you been there yourself?
Just over a year.
For the state of Texas itself, how long does winemaking and grape growing go back in the state?
So it goes back really into the 60s. And I mean, you know, people have been growing grapes here for a long time, but in any commercial kind of quantity, it really started in the 60s with Kim McPherson's dad, Doc McPherson. And it's kind of grown from there. I definitely think there's going to be a huge amount of growth over the next 5 years or so. And I think there's going to be a lot more attention spent on not just investing in, you know, new vineyard plantings, but also in, you know, trying to figure out how do we make world-class wine in Texas? And there's some amazing wineries out here that are already, I think, really pushing the envelope, not just Brennan, Lost Oak, and McPherson on kind of our responsibility, but people like the team at William Chris Vineyards, I think, is doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah, the whole idea is getting the word out, right?
Exactly. We're very much in that, you know, all for one, one for all mode, which is not something that has been around in Napa, I think, for a while.
Well, farmers always tend to stick together. That's one of the cool things about the industry, something I've always liked. Let's talk about the wines and the grapes you're growing. What are you growing there?
We're growing a little bit of everything. Again, we see a lot of Rhone-style varietals just because of the climate. Each of our wineries kind of has its own style that they kind of strive for. Brennan Vineyards is definitely more old-world, refined, and elegant. They're doing a lot of Viognier, Cabernet, Tempranillo, and some red blends. Lost Oak Winery, a little bit more fruit-forward, a little bit kind of skews towards a younger palate. There, again, you see a lot of Tempranillo out here. They do some sweet wines that are really, really fantastic. And then McPherson does a little bit of everything. He consults for a bunch of different brands and makes everything from Syrah to Sangiovese to some sparkling wine as well.
Okay, when you're referring to sweet wines, are we talking about dessert wines then, or...?
Everything from kind of a late harvest style all the way through to just stop ferments that are just sweet and kind of bringing in that kind of new group of wine drinkers that might not be ready for something as bold as a Cabernet. About probably 15% of our bottle sales is of wines that have residual sugar of probably, you know, 0.5% or more.
Interesting. Now, you were talking about tourism and it being the number two state for tourism, which is really amazing. I don't know how I asked this question. How did that come about? Again, Texas, when it comes to wine, isn't always on the tip of the tongue of 49 other states.
Yeah, it's kind of neat because I think a lot of people come to the Hill Country as kind of a reprieve from other portions of Texas, especially in the summers. You know, you get into Houston, you know, you've got the weather that most people don't really love. So they drive 3 hours out to the Hill Country. They can escape all the humidity. And there's this little town of Fredericksburg, which is this kind of old German settled town that is kind of like, I kind of think of it as like kind of a German version of Calistoga. But really, really cool art galleries, tasting rooms, some great restaurants. So we see this little town that I think has, you know, 5 or 10,000 people living in it a year, ballooned to, you know, 10 or 15,000 visitors on a weekend.
Wow.
So that kind of, as you see people coming over, basically the road that leads into Fredericksburg is where all the wineries are located. So it's kind of organically grown into this amazing little region where, you know, there's wine, but there's also breweries, distilleries, and some amazing other things you can go kind of see and do.
Interesting. I'm not surprised there's distilleries down there. To me, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, we've got some great ones. And just down the road, they make some of the best whiskey in Texas. And I happen to frequent it often.
Oh, you're a whiskey drinker, are you? Good for you.
If it's wet, I'll drink it.
Yeah. That's a T-shirt, isn't it?
It should be.
Pretty much. I'm going to go back to when you were talking about the rebranding and calling it the Texas Wine Collective. Does that open the door for other wineries to join you? Not that I'm trying to open the door for you, but just to get an idea, is that something you look to in the future, or are you just staying to these three wineries?
So it's going to stick to these three wineries, but really the in-house team kind of that we manage here will be creating our own brands. So we've got a rosé project coming up that we partnered with Kim McPherson on, and then we're doing an all magnums project that we're going to blend a little bit of wine from Lost Oak Winery and Brennan Vineyards, and we have two other brands that are planned probably for later in the year.
Cool. Now, your job as general manager, when you're dealing with three different wineries, are you herding cats a lot, or how does that work out?
It's been really, really fun. I think it's been something that I don't think I've ever had in my career is so much trust, especially very quickly, from a group of owners. And it's been really fun to be able to kind of get deeper into each of their businesses and operations and use my experience, you know, coming from Napa to really create some efficiency, but also create some collaboration between the three wineries. I think we have this amazing opportunity that most, I think, wineries in the world don't have, where you've got three very different styles of wine and three winemakers that you can work with. And the more that they can collaborate and innovate together, I think the faster we can move our quality of wine throughout the years.
Is there a wine? Now, I was surprised when you mentioned Tempranillo, which is one of my favorite wines. Are there some more extreme grapes being grown there that you wouldn't expect in Texas?
There's more things grown here that I have never heard of than I would have ever imagined. So I've learned about things like Chardonnay and Blanc de Bois, and other fun things that are kind of, you know, lab experiments at different colleges around the country that some went right, some went wrong, and a lot of them just work in Texas. A lot of them are really vigorous growing varietals that can take punishment, that can take some heat, and they tend to thrive here.
Not to be too silly, but you say experiments that went wrong. In the year 2020, we've got to be careful with that idea. Could eat the countryside.
Exactly. Let's put this year to bed and have a great one next year.
We're looking forward to it. It's right around the corner. You know, in the industry, so much has changed, and I'm sure, you know, your time you spent in Napa, you saw a lot of change there. A lot of packaging has changed. You've got cans, you've got boxes, bags, all kinds of stuff. Is that something that's making its way into Texas as well?
It is, and I think it's a positive thing for the industry out here. We've got a couple good brands that are getting some traction that are in cans. It really, you know, I think Texas especially is still in the education business. It's about helping people understand why wines can be great from Texas, and giving some, you know, less expensive, more approachable packaging really helps get wine into more people so they can really experience it and then kind of get them passionate about wine so they continue to grow along their journey and hopefully come find us one day.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's a journey, right?
Absolutely. And I think We see that really well at Texas Wine Collective because we get everything from first-timers never been to a winery to, you know, wine geeks that love to talk about all the details. So we're kind of creating these cool experiences that will allow anybody at any point in that journey to come have a great time.
Well, you know, not to kind of get to the negative side of things, but to set that up, do you spend time yourself in the tasting room, I'm assuming, or no?
I do. I'm in the operation. It's been really, really fun, and it's a great way for me, as being new to Texas, to taste a lot more wines and get to understand the wines out here pretty quickly.
That's very cool. You know, I sort of wonder, being in your shoes in a tasting room situation, we all know wine lovers are wonderful people. They're just nuts. They're crazy. They're passionate. But you do get occasional people who do want to look down their nose, and maybe a first-time visitor going, Texas wine. How do you deal with that?
You know, we see some of that, and especially I think with this year and all its craziness, we've seen a lot of Texans that would normally take their annual or biannual trip to Napa or to somewhere in California, you know, take a drive instead since it was more accessible. And, you know, I think a lot of them were surprised, and I think a lot of them were disappointed. You know, we're not Napa, we're not Sonoma, we're not Washington yet. We've got a long way to go.
Sure.
But I think there's some amazing things being done out here, and that's kind of what we focus on, is trying to figure out what people like. And if they start saying, hey, I'm into Alpha Omega and Schaefer and these, you know, big reds, you know, I might push them into, hey, you know, let's try something that's never going to be Alpha Omega Cab. You know, a lot of people want to be that, and a lot of people try, and Jean's really good at what he does. But I push them into something that is similar in style, maybe, but has a unique story about it that they can still connect with.
Sure. Well, and in the end, too, I mean, you don't really want to be Napa. You want to be Texas. You want to be that part of the state, right? I mean, it's about the individuality.
Absolutely. And I think there's something about growing grapes in Texas and the kind of the struggle that is unique to Texas as it is in other places. But people from Texas love to drink a local product, and I think the more that give Texas wines a chance, the more that will be surprised, and I think they'll see the wine quality and the passion behind it continue to grow as the industry kind of gets some legs and starts to run.
Sure, and what wine lover doesn't like to turn somebody else on to a wine going, hey, try this from Texas, this is good.
Exactly, and it's all about, you know, having a good time, and I think we definitely portray that Texas hospitality and Southern hospitality here, but I think as a general in our region, I think people are really excited when people come in the door, and they're excited to tell their story and excited to share what kind of their passion is. And I think that's something that I haven't experienced as much recently in my career, and I'm excited to have something that feels more organic and kind of is still in that growth phase.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty exciting for you. But right now, we're also in the middle of COVID, as everybody is, and many places, Napa, California in general, they're shut down. They can't really do tastings with people. What is the status in Texas, or at least in your area specifically?
We are still open. We're under kind of some capacity limits indoors, so we haven't been throwing events, anything like that. But we're lucky that we have we've got a large indoor event center space that we've kind of used to be social distanced. But we also have, I mean, almost 150 seats outdoors that we can space. And so we still see a good amount of people. You know, we're enforcing our mask mandates and all that fun stuff. But overall, I think we've seen a good uptick in visitation year over year, and we've been able to do so very safely.
Cool. And I'm sort of making an assumption here, again, going back to climate, that you are able to have a winter outdoors at this point, or is that somewhat limited?
No, it was like 74 degrees yesterday. It's about 70 degrees today. So we'll get some rain, we have some days that are in the, you know, 40s and 50s. But I think overall, we utilize our outdoor space a lot. And even in, you know, July and August, when it's, you know, hovering usually around 100, 105, people sit outside and they like to drink wine. So I'm not going to complain.
No, I wouldn't if I were you. It's certainly something you'd be accustomed to. How many years yourself have you been in the wine business?
So my background's on the hotel and restaurant side of things. So from kind of managing a wine list and doing that. But my first harvest I did in 2008. I was an intern for Fisher Vineyards.
Oh, sure. Well, so you've just kind of evolved your way through the business then.
Yeah, it's been super fun, and you know, going from I learned more in 4 or 5 months working with Whitney Fisher and Aaron Pott than I probably have doing anything else in my entire life. And from there, I kind of went more onto the sales and marketing side and eventually into the kind of more management and strategy.
Sure. That's not surprising. Aaron is an amazing guy.
He is. I've been very, very fortunate to work with some amazing winemakers, and I think I've been lucky to have a really good relationship with them and be able to kind of soak up some knowledge from them even when they don't know what's happening.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, in your current position, do you reference back home and maybe ask a couple questions to former associates, to friends, and say, you know, we're dealing with this or we've got this. What do you think? Any opinions?
I do it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, and I think it's really, even for the people that I do get a call and talk to, they're, you know, it's not the same old question, which is kind of fun for them. So I think they've kind of taken an interest in how they grow grapes out here, how we make wine out here. But, you know, at Alpha Omega, Jean does a ton of barrel fermentations.
Right.
And I've talked to winemakers out here about barrel fermentations, and they look at me like I'm crazy. So I think we've got a long way to go. And I think the more high-end winemaking technique we can apply to grape growing and making of wine out here, the faster we're going to make quality wine.
Well, I think that, too, when you're talking about barrel fermentation, you know, you're talking a significant cost involved with that. And I imagine that's got to be something as an owner of winery, you have to look at this very seriously. How am I going to benefit from this?
I couldn't agree more. And I think that's something that, you know, everywhere I've been, I've tried to, you know, when I could, tried to help a winemaker have a passion project. Make something that isn't necessarily budget-focused, that they can make whatever they want. Because I'm a firm believer when a winemaker's making something that they love and are passionate about making, it just turns out that much better. So that's something we're working on with both Brennan Vineyards and Lost Oak Winery this year, is giving kind of their winemakers an opportunity to do something really fun that might not be the norm for what they do on a yearly basis. But one of our advantages is the fruit is so inexpensive in Texas compared to somewhere like Napa that budget-wise, you can spend some money on barrels and not break the bank.
Interesting. You know, we were talking about climate before, but the growing season, what does it compare to an area like Napa?
So it's much shorter out here, and you have a lot more rain. So that's really one of the big challenges is, you know, this last year we had a big freeze, which killed off a lot of buds.
Wow.
And it probably took 40 or 50% of the kind of, it was all on the high plains. So it took the vast majority of that fruit and kind of threw it away for us. So this year's been a little bit challenging, but overall, you know, you still get the cool nights and warm days. And if you can sneak by without a crazy hailstorm or high winds, I think you can get some consistency and grow some really good fruit.
Sure. I'm kind of interested, and I'm making an assumption here, that property is significantly less expensive than a place like Napa. Is that fair to say that?
It is very fair.
So we think of Texas big. Typical thing. Are these winemakers that you're working with, are these larger properties than you might expect? How is that working out?
It's a little mix of everything. When you get up into the high plains, a lot of the people that are growing grapes, you know, own 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 acres, and they'll have a couple hundred acres dedicated to vineyard, and the rest will be anything else. So again, it's a lot of wheat. So from there, and then you've got small guys who have, you know, 3 acres of vines in their backyard, or a small estate of 50 or 60 acres that are trying to grow everything on site. So we still have this kind of, everybody can, I think, as you kind of alluded to, it's less expensive to buy land out here. So you don't necessarily have to be a millionaire to afford to start a project. You can kind of bootstrap it and do it on kind of a shoestring budget and see if you can make great wine.
Sure. Of course, land is only part of it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. This is kind of a broad question, and this could go positive or negative, or it could go both. What makes you crazy about wine?
For me, it's the people. I mean, I think I'm a firm believer that you can have an amazing bottle of wine that tastes terribly because you're around the wrong company, and you can have a very mediocre bottle of wine that blows your socks off because you're with the right people. From a business standpoint, wine is slow. There's no rushing it.
Yeah.
There's no pushing it faster than it wants to go. So you got to be patient, and that is not something I'm great at.
Many of us are in the same boat. I'm interested in labor there. You know, obviously California labor issues have become much more of a big deal, and many other parts of the country. Do you have a feel for that in Texas?
We're going to go through the same thing. I think we're not – at the point where California is yet, but especially on, I think, the hospitality side of the business. You know, we're Fredericksburg is, again, you're about an hour and a half from two major cities, which is further than most want to commute. So we're going to struggle, I think, as we see this growth to attract and retain the right talent. But I think we're also going to attract a lot of talent from out of state that can only help add to the knowledge base and push the industry further faster.
Well, I'm also thinking about in the vineyards, too, because you're looking at very specific talent to be able to work in the vineyard. Not everybody can do that.
Yeah, and it's been fun to kind of get to know a few vineyard owners and kind of vineyard managers. Most of them came from farming something completely different. So a lot of them are still very much in that kind of learning. They're trying to understand not just how to grow grapes, but how to control yields and how to deal with bugs and issues that kind of are arising out here. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think the more outside influence that comes with some experience in the vineyard, the faster it's going to push the knowledge level. But we've got a incredibly passionate group of people. And I think one of our biggest challenges is we're still trying to grow grapes like we're trying to grow wheat and other big ag products. So trying to help the vineyard owner and vineyard managers kind of understand, hey, this is a handcrafted product. This isn't, right? The more machines you throw at it doesn't necessarily make it better. So it's been fun to see, and you're seeing a lot of people kind of take a step back and start to understand that, you know, micro farming is the right way to go, and they can get a higher quality product, which can in turn get them, you know, higher price points when it comes to selling it.
Cool. Dave, I think what you're doing there is a really unique project, and it must be a lot of fun to have come from such a strong wine country into Texas and watch this place rise. I think that's great. For our listeners who'd like to learn about what will be called the Texas Wine Collective, how would they learn about you? What is your website?
So the website right now is still 4pointwine.com, but as we go through the rebranding, it will become texaswinecollective.com.
Dave, I really appreciate you taking the time. It's fun to learn about Texas wine, and I hope to learn more about it. I wish you guys great luck and success. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Learn more by visiting 4pointwine.com or texaswinecollective.com.
For listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Geeshan. Copyright 2020.